Public radio is here for you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how big your home is, or what kind of car you drive. WOSU and NPR connect you to news and information in civil conversations. That's why 43 million Americans listen to NPR each week. WOSU is part of our community, covering and discussing issues important to you, standing with the facts. Meet the moment with WOSU. Go to WOSU.org/protect.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. For nearly 50 years, summer blockbusters have been some of the biggest movies of the year, spanning all genres, from Alien to Ratatouille to the first Star Wars. Many of cinema's defining films have come out during the summer. Could we see that happen again this year? Highly anticipated movies like Marvel's Fantastic Four, First Steps, and DC's Superman are expected to bring crowds to theaters. But have we returned to pre-pandemic numbers? And will the crowds keep coming as more and more streaming services are making movies that you can watch at home as well? Joining us now is Chris Hamill, CEO of the Gateway Film Center here in Columbus. Welcome to All Sides, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
So starting off, is there a summer movie that you are most looking forward to that's coming out this summer?
Yes.
Yes. What is that?
I'm a huge Wes Anderson film buff. Yeah. And we get another Wes Anderson film on June 6th, The Phoenician Scheme, which has essentially every major star in our industry trying to work with Wes Anderson. So I'm very excited. I have seen the film.
Yeah.
But I'm very excited for audiences at the Film Center to see it.
Is there a lot of I know that person. I know that person as they pop up on screen.
Yes. But also he has a really interesting talent of making you kind of forget these celebrities because the characters are pretty richly drawn. And I'm sure you've seen Wes Anderson movies before. His aesthetic is so amazing that you get kind of lost in just looking at the movie.
Yeah. Amazing, bizarre. You
know, amazing, bizarre, and also hilarious. So yeah, The Phoenician Scheme is the film I'm most looking forward to.
Now, if that's what you're most looking forward to, what do you think, besides at your theater, but just in general, what do you predict the biggest movie of the summer is going to be?
Well, that's always hard. And you led in with saying, you know, we're still in post COVID-19 recovery. So sometimes, and we've experienced this a couple times in the last few years, films that look on paper like they're going to be huge don't translate to ticket sales. And also, I think all of us as audience members have maybe gotten a little smarter. You know, we can see it when we watch the trailer or read about it. Maybe that's what I'm going to wait for streaming versus watch it in a theater. But, I think this weekend you have two top candidates for the big grossing films of the summer. Summer really is getting going with Memorial Day weekend, and that's Mission Impossible: The Final Reckoning, allegedly the last Mission Impossible film. It's
with
the eighth.
With a 62-year-old Tom Cruise. Yes,
he looks great though for being 62 years old. He's still doing his own stunts. And then the live action remake of Lilo and Stitch, which was made by Dean Fleischer Camp, who made one of the most charming films of the last decade, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, a couple of years ago.
Yes.
And, my kids are of an age where the animated version of Lilo and Stitch was like a daily watch.
Same.
So I have a feeling this incredibly great-looking live-action version's it's going to be huge.
Now, besides all the blockbusters, what kind of special programming is Gateway offering over the summer? I know that you tend to gear toward a different crowd than those coming to see the big blockbusters.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I mean, first and foremost, some of the blockbusters we're going to talk about today will be on screen at the center. And we want to make sure that if you're a MyGFC member or just a person who appreciates going to independent cinema, you can see some of those blockbusters on screen. We're going to do our best to make sure the better of the group make their way in. But from the, more of the independent and world cinema titles, I mentioned The Phoenician Scheme to you a minute ago. I think that's going to be a huge film at the center. Materialists, which, if you haven't seen the trailer yet, make sure you watch the trailer for Materialists. This is the new film from Celine Song, who made Past Lives a couple of years ago, which many of us saw multiple times and fell in love with, and has a great cast, including Chris Evans and the ubiquitous Pedro Pascal. He's in about every single movie this summer.
That's true. Okay.
And then later in the summer, there's some great films, including Paul Thomas Anderson's new film, which we're excited to get on screen late in the year.
Now, have you seen crowds returning to your theater? Do you feel like movies have picked back up in this post-pandemic world? They may not be pre-pandemic numbers, but are you seeing an increase? So is your trends going up?
I would say, 100% yes. Mm-hmm. From where we were in the recovery in 2021 till now, it's like two different universes.
Yeah. You can't compare anymore, right?
You can't. Even if you think back just to the capacity restrictions we were operating under, right? Even when films were well-received, we were only selling 20% of these screening rooms. Mm-hmm. So even when they did well, they're sold out with 40 people in the room. I would say now the audience, again, is a little bit more sophisticated. And a lot of times what makes a hit isn't always, how great the film is, but it's how relevant the film is and are people talking about it. So I'd say audiences are back, but there's a greater ebb and flow to the big crowds, versus maybe how it was, pre-pandemic.
Mm. Now, I know that you have brought back your Cult 101 movies at the Gateway. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So Cult 101 was probably the most ambitious film program we've ever done. We got a group of film critics and filmmakers together in 2016, and we asked them to pick the 101 best cult films of all time.
Mm.
And then over the course of the year in 2017, we screened all 101 of them for the audience. So audiences loved it. We got two very repeated pieces of feedback. The first one was, I didn't get to see that one. You only played it for a couple days, and
yeah.
I couldn't get to it. And second, when are you going to do Cult 202 or Cult 303 or whatever? So, we've always made it a point to ensure that audiences get to see some of these great classic films on the big screen. So when we reopened after the pandemic, we decided to make Cult 101 a series that existed in perpetuity, and we just expanded the definition a little bit.
Okay.
Where it was initially maybe films you hadn't seen or you'd heard about but didn't see, we expanded it to include restorations, maybe films that had found audiences in their initial theatrical releases, but those audiences had grown exponentially in the post-theatrical experience. And now it's sort of like the best film series we can't get rid of because every single week, this weekend, Night of the Hunter restoration and its 70th anniversary played as part of Cult 101. Also, The Descent, which came out 20 years ago, played as part of Cult 101. And they drew huge crowds, and audiences really want to see those movies in a big screen environment with other people.
Who want to see those
right.
movie, yeah.
I think half of it's watching the movie for the first time or again, and the other half is getting to talk to the other people you watched it with.
Yes, and someone who actually likes the same movie you like. Oh, wow.
And yeah. It sort of defies the streaming, home viewing experience because, I don't know how it is for you, Amy, but a lot of times when I'm watching at home, like I'm also folding laundry and I need to pause because somebody needs something or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so
yeah.
You don't have that experience in a cinema.
Do you play the Cult 101 movies on a particular day or is it each weekend?
We play them all weekend and then we usually do encores on Tuesday because we have a Super Tuesday bargain day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that way maybe, people who don't have an opportunity to on the weekend or, need the economic relief of seeing it on a $5 Tuesday, get a chance to see those movies on the big screen.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about summer movies with Chris Hamill, CEO of the Gateway Film Center here in Columbus. Now, a company that has dominated the box office in the past has been struggling a little bit lately, Pixar, and is coming out with a new movie this summer called Elio.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the... Did I say it right?
You did.
Okay. I struggled for a second. Here's the trailer.
Back home, I didn't fit in. I thought Earth was the problem. But what if it's me?
Well, I like you. And you seem fine to me.
I never had a friend before.
Me neither.
Up top.
So, Pixar, as I said, was struggling a bit lately, but this is their new film, and I got a little worried for Pixar because I haven't seen enough promotion of it for me to know how to say the character's name. what do you think is going to happen with Pixar with this film?
I think it's a tough sell. Mm-hmm. It's surrounded this summer by other really quality content that's going to be out there for families. But it's Pixar, and these are, the greatest animators in the world. Zoe Saldana, of course, does the main voice for this film, and it does have sort of a science fiction, alien, friendship theme.
Mm-hmm.
But they are stuck in a weird cycle, right? Mm-hmm. Like Inside Out 2 is their highest grossing film of the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And so they're even stuck a little bit in the sequel franchise kind of world. So I think it's a wait and see. It's a new IP, brand new set of characters, and hopefully for Pixar's sake, this is the beginning of a new franchise.
Yeah, Pixar used to have some of their biggest hits, Cars, Ratatouille, and WALL-E, all premiered during the summer. But then there was last year's Inside Out 2. But then Disney has also had some struggles as well with underpromoted films and less audience excitement for these live-action remakes. There's just a change in what's happening with Disney. Like, for example, the live-action Snow White didn't do as well as many had hoped.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I think they are also struggling with a little bit of franchise fatigue. Mm-hmm. And while they have this wonderful product called Disney Plus, mm-hmm. I think with Marvel and Star Wars and even some of these animated franchises, you start to wonder, can I watch these movies if I haven't seen all the TV shows or if I haven't seen all the other films? Mm-hmm. And so I'm not sure the quality of this content has dropped off that much. I think it's actually sometimes great.
Mm-hmm.
But I, as an audience member, and I've heard this a lot from audiences, you know, there's confusion. Can I go see the new Marvel movie if I haven't seen the last two or three, or I didn't watch the last show?
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're under the weight of a little bit of their own success, where they have Disney Plus and some of these great movies and shows that are made for home viewing.
Now, on the topic of Disney, one of the biggest summer releases expected to be is Fantastic Four First Steps. Let's listen to a little bit of that trailer.
Our city, our planet, owe a debt to these intrepid souls. And while we can never repay them, we can certainly celebrate them.
Thank you, Fantastic Four.
Thank you.
Thank you, Fantastic Four.
Please welcome the Fantastic Four.
Now, I'm not sure how many Fantastic Four movies there have been. I meant to look it up, but maybe I lost count. what do you think about this movie? How do you think it'll do?
Well, I know we're going to have an analyst on in a few minutes, and mm-hmm. I think this is probably the hardest of all the summer movies to predict.
Yeah.
I mean, first and foremost, it's surrounded by other big blockbusters. We have the new Jurassic World film. It actually comes out the week after Superman, James Gunn's Superman, and that seems like a direct competitor. Again, Pedro Pascal is the lead. He's mm-hmm. in about every movie this summer. He's in this one, too. And they've assembled a great cast. This is the first Fantastic Four film that's actually under the Disney banner. So mm-hmm. they acquired the rights during the 20th Century Fox acquisition. I don't also know how many Fantastic Four films there have been, nor have I seen them all.
Right.
But I have high hopes as a viewer, and I'm curious to hear what Paul says later about how the industry is predicting the business around this film.
Yeah, before we get to our analyst about some of this, we're going to talk. Let's talk for a minute about another superhero movie that you just mentioned, James Gunn's Superman. It's also coming out this summer. Here's a snippet from Superman.
Superman. He's not a man. He's an it. Somehow become the focal point of the entire world's conversation. I will not accept that.
So several parts of this movie were filmed in Cleveland. There's at least one scene from Cincinnati. I think something else was filmed in Mentor, Ohio. Do you expect this movie will do well everywhere, but especially maybe here?
Yes,
Ohio?
To both. I think there will be some elevated local interest, because even though it's Metropolis, it's supposed to be, or it's Cleveland and Cincinnati, it's supposed to be Metropolis.
Yeah.
But also, I you know, Superman's the superhero, right? And mm-hmm. you talk about having a lot of Fantastic Four films. Good luck guessing how many Superman films we've had or how many times the franchise has been rebooted. I do think James Gunn is a fascinating choice to take over the DC world, and especially Superman. And he did such a great job with the Guardians of the Galaxy films. So I'm excited for it. I think it's going to do great. And it does feel like a summer movie in the purest way, right? It's mm-hmm. Superman. They even invented new characters for this film. So I'm pretty excited.
They invented new characters.
They did.
Because there's a new villain. It's not Lex Luthor, right?
Well, Lex Luthor is in the film. Mm-hmm. But there are other baddies that we're going to see again or meet for the first time. So I don't want to spoil too much for the audience. But
have you seen this already?
Yes, it's a good film.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, being the CEO of a movie theater, how do you feel like the idea of the summer blockbuster is playing out? You know, I said at the beginning of the show that, you know, there's movies like the idea of taking in your big movie and putting it out in the summer came because Jaws was such a big hit, you know,
right.
and like everyone was doing that.
Right.
Do you feel like big movies belong in the summer?
Well, I do. And I also think some big movies lend themselves better to summer than others. Mm-hmm. I mean, if Jaws was really the beginning of summer blockbusters, that was exactly 50 years ago. So we have a 50-year sample size of summer blockbusters. And I think the audience always tells us, you know, these are the ones we really want to get out of the heat and go out and watch in the summertime. And then there's others that maybe they don't resonate quite as well.
Well, coming up, we are going to continue to talk about summer movies and find out how important the summer movie season is for the industry as a whole. And Chris from the Gateway Film Center is going to stay with us. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. With the upcoming summer movie season, the film industry is in a unique position. 2024's Best Picture winner, Anora, is putting a spotlight on independent films. Legacy characters like Mr. Fantastic and Superman may dominate the big screen this summer, or dinosaurs may prove once again to be the biggest draw to the theaters. Also, the role Disney and Pixar will play in the coming months remains up in the air. But what is happening with the movie industry, and what might we expect from the box office? Still with us is Chris Hamill, CEO of the Gateway Film Center in Columbus. Thanks again for being here, Chris.
Thank you.
And also joining us now is Paul Dare Garabedian, Senior Media Analyst at ComScore. He's widely recognized and a quoted authority on entertainment and the film industry. Welcome back to All Sides, Paul.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So, Paul, do you feel like movies have begun to recover nationwide after the big slump of the pandemic? Are we seeing an upswing?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been quite the roller coaster ride for movies. And in fact, you know, I think back to mid-March of 2020 when movie theaters essentially shut down. And then it was like the box office just stopped because there was no one going to the theaters. And just previously to that, in November of 2019, we had Disney Plus launch, and then the streaming services came to the forefront and the movie theater was pushed to the wayside, although we did see drive-ins took a big uptick, which was a very encouraging sign for the industry. People still wanted to go outside of the house to see a movie with other people in that communal environment.
Now, movies in movie theaters continue to gain ground, but with so many streaming services making movies too, can they continue to keep up movie theaters?
I absolutely feel that way. I mean, in fact, if you look at the box office this year, it's been quite incredible, especially in the month of April, which was up about 100% from April of last year with a Minecraft movie and then Sinners, both overperforming to a degree that nobody expected, and Thunderbolts as well, holding in there week after week in its run. And then we're coming up on the big Memorial weekend, which could be one of the biggest Memorial weekends ever. So it's all product driven. By that, I mean movie driven. So it's really, that's the ups and downs of the box office. If there's movies that people want to see, they'll come out. If not, they stay home. But I feel that streaming and the movie theaters are additive and complementary, not adversarial. People who love watching content at home are just into content, or into movies and television shows and these great stories. And that's why they do both. They go to the movie theater and they stay home and watch streaming. So I think they're additive in that way.
Well, Chris, let me bring you into the conversation here on thoughts on what Paul just said. Do you feel like there's both there? People who love movies watch at home and come to your theater?
Yeah, everybody has a kitchen, but they still go out to eat. Mm-hmm. But I do think Paul's right. You know, there has to be the great storytelling in the films themselves. And now, you know, even probably more than any other moment in our industry, they have to generate word of mouth. There has to be conversation about them on social media. And, you know, there's also a limit of how many times people are going to go to the movies each year. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when there's a backlog or we're jammed up with content, some of those films just, it's hard for them to find audiences because other films are more conversational. They're more relevant at the time.
And Paul also mentioned that idea of being product driven, giving Minecraft as an example. I'm not sure Minecraft was the best movie for like your particular type of clientele. But do you find people come for like the product like Minecraft?
Not really at the film center. Mm-hmm. But Paul also mentioned Sinners, which mm-hmm. is Ryan Coogler's new film, which is still on screen at the center. Mm-hmm. And still bringing huge crowds in because it meets the criteria that he described. It's a great movie. Mm. And then, audiences have heard you need to see it. So they keep coming out. It's also one of those really great films where a lot of people are seeing it multiple times. It's so rich in the both the way it looks and the characters that it's a multi-watch film. So I agree completely with Paul. I think audiences who love movies don't want to wait to watch them, or they want to go out and see them. Mm. And they also want to watch things at home.
Paul, what summer movie for this summer are you most excited about?
Well, there's so many, and this is not just hubris on my part. I feel like this may be, at least in terms of the blockbusters, but I also want to mention that independent film and specialized films are just so critical as well. And we have some of those coming out in the summer. But in terms of the blockbusters, I don't even know where to start. I mean, we have this this weekend with Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, which I never believe anything's the final of anything when it's this popular, but and then Lilo and Stitch. I think that 1-2 punch, it's not Barbenheimer, but it's reminiscent of that in as much as those two movies are very different. We're going to have, again, last year we had the disruption to the release schedule due to the strikes that impacted everything. And that really put a damper on the month of May in 2024. We had a very low grossing May. We had one of the lowest grossing Memorial weekends in history last year. We didn't have a Marvel movie to kick off the summer as we did this year with Thunderbolts. And then here we are a year later, and we could have one of the biggest months of May ever. And then also perhaps, and well, not perhaps, it will be one of the biggest Memorial weekends ever coming up this weekend.
Now, after Thunderbolts, a movie that was received very well, can Marvel come back and be a household name again with the Fantastic Four?
I think that Thunderbolts is a great reset for Marvel. And then to follow that up with, if you've just looked, just the trailer for Fantastic Four is so retro, futuristic, cool, a great cast. And I think, look, everybody talks about like superhero fatigue. There is no superhero fatigue. If you look at how Superman's going to do with my favorite Crypto, the super dog is that is highlighted. I just say it's bad movie fatigue or bad marketing fatigue, if you will. So I love this lineup of film. F1 though is a true original. The Joe Kaczynski film who directed Top Gun Maverick with Brad Pitt in a Formula One movie, and that's a true original. We'll see how that one does as well. And Jurassic World, as you mentioned, with the dinosaurs.
Yeah. Chris, we talked about Superman a little bit and earlier in the show, but is it kind of like, if you're going to make yet another Superman movie, you might as well add a dog?
I mean, I share in the excitement. I mean, I want to see Crypto, and I think audiences will love it. And yeah, you might as well add a dog because you get a whole other audience there, don't you?
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about summer movies with Chris Hamill, CEO of the Gateway Film Center, and Paul Dare-Garabedian, Senior Media Analyst at ComScore. Now, there are some films with smaller budgets, more independent films that are getting some buzz. Zach Cregger's Weapons, which has an interesting premise. Let's listen to a little of that.
This is a true story that happened in my town. So this one Wednesday is like a normal day for the whole school. But today was different. Every other class had all their kids. But Mrs. Gandhi's room was totally empty. And you know why? Because the night before, at 2:17 in the morning, every kid woke up, got out of bed, walked downstairs and into the dark, and they never came back.
Now, Chris, that trailer was terrifying. Do you think this film, will this film do well?
I'm so happy you brought it up. In preparing for today's show, I was going to say if there was like one sleeper that not a lot of people are talking about in the summer, I think it's Weapons. And Barbarian was one of the most terrifying films of the last 10 years, crossed over from genre audiences to mainstream audiences. And this movie looks great. It's going to be perfectly placed in mid-August, and I think it's going to do very, very well.
Paul, what do you make of the idea of these independent films sometimes being a sleeper film and coming out of nowhere and being a big hit?
I love that because, as Chris talked about, this movie looks like just one of those movies that seemingly comes out of nowhere that doesn't have the buzz that maybe like some giant blockbuster has, but then winds up like Barbarian providing one of the most chilling and scary and out of control experiences in the movie theater you can have. And I just love the month of August. I always have. I call it the punk rock month on the calendar because we've had films like Inglourious Basterds, Superbad, the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie. The list goes on and on. And to have a movie like Weapons in that month, we have Freakier Friday, but also The Naked Gun. I mean, maybe with Liam Neeson. And then, of course, we'll have Caught Stealing, the Austin Butler movie from Darren Aronofsky and The Roses with Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman, directed by Jay Roach. And so I just look at it as a portfolio approach to movies that you have all these various films in there. You have Smurfs, you have Superman, you have Fantastic Four, The Bad Guys 2, Naked Gun, Megan 2. And as I read those off, though, I realize pretty much every single one of these is some sort of franchise film, some known IP. But that's what I love about the films that Chris and his center focus on, is that that's where you get some of the greatest and most satisfying movie-going experiences, is with those very filmmaker-driven, auteur-driven films that push the envelope. And those are great in a theater as well. You know, they always say, my dinner with Andre, you don't need that on a big screen. Well, I do if they ever bring it back, I'm telling you.
Well, and, you know, Paul, we hear about the big-name movies that cost a lot of money, and everyone asks, will they make enough money to warrant the cost? But then there's a film like Anora, which won the Best Picture Oscar last year, and that was an independent film. Did that one surprise you?
Well, yeah. I mean, that movie is such an unlikely Best Picture winner, and I love it. It's really cool when you have a film like that and you have the Academy voting for a film that is not, I mean, it used to be that the Academy is very conservative in their choices, and Nora definitely not a conservative choice. And yeah, I was a bit surprised, but very happy to see that. There was a lot of the Best Picture contenders for this year, for the films that came out last year, was really an incredible assortment of film. It was just great. And to have Sean Baker get up there in front of the whole world on the Academy stage and talk about the importance of the movie theater experience. I think that every theater owner around the world was like, let's erect a statue to Sean Baker in our lobbies, because he just encapsulated what we all feel about going to the movies.
Chris, were you surprised that Anora won Best Picture, or did it do well for you?
It was one of our highest grossing films of last year and this year, because it was sort of like the film that would never end. And that's a great problem to have. The Sean Baker statue is going to be installed at the Film Center shortly. And also, we have our Pride Month program coming up. And I think one of the highlights for us is Tangerine, which is one of Sean Baker's earlier films. It's wonderful, shot primarily on an iPhone. Huh. And I think it was actually shot completely on iPhones. And I think audiences are probably just discovering this great filmmaker. So I agree. Nora is such a great film. And I was both pleased and shocked that it won.
Now, on the flip side of an independent film like that, remakes and sequels are all the rage everywhere, including this summer, with Jurassic Park Rebirth expected to hopefully maybe be a big hit. Here's a snippet from the trailer.
This island was the research facility for the original Jurassic Park.
We need DNA from the three biggest dinosaurs.
Do we have to get a sample from an egg?
I suppose we could try and get it from the parent, but they're a flying carnivore the size of an F-16.
Paul, why so many remakes? Why so many sequels? Why are we stuck in this nothing new, the same thing again and again?
You know, it's I think that Hollywood doesn't like to take risks generally. So there's a thought that if you have a remake, a reboot, a prequel, a sequel, that it makes it more of a sure bet. But that's not always the case. And, you know, you still have to have the movie there. And you can have a movie that's part of known IP, open big based on big marketing spend that gets you that big opening weekend. But then if it drops 70% in the second weekend, you're out of the game before you've almost even started. So I think it's just that. But also then the kind of the paradox is that audiences seem to not, they seem to always want more original movies. But yet when sometimes you give that to the audience, either by the fault maybe of the marketing or the release date, like Black Bag, Last Breath, Novocaine, Mickey 17, those are all true originals. They did varying degrees of business, but they weren't like knock it out of the park hits in movie theaters, though they were all great movies. Then Sinners comes along and shows that a true original can do well. And then now we have, I mean, look, in the summer, it's about generally playing it safe. Again, 95% of the movies coming out between now and Labor Day weekend are known IP. I mean, I mean, The Phoenician Scheme, though, Wes Anderson's new film, at least that's an original. But even Ballerina is a spinoff of the John Wick franchise. You have a Karate Kid movie. Again, the aforementioned, you know, Superman, and then Jurassic World Rebirth, which actually looks in a way like a reset for the franchise. I think Scarlett Johansson, we saw a bunch of footage at CinemaCon earlier this year. That looks like a big, big movie around the 4th of July. And then Superman a week later, Smurfs a week after that, and then on and on and on. It's just like a hit parade of films. As Chris said, people generally don't go to, you know, 2-3 movies a month even at all. But this could be the summer where people are like, wow, we got to go. I don't know. We're going to have to join some kind of loyalty program at a theater so we can go see all these movies. And, you know, AMC just announced they're going to do these half price Wednesdays, which I think has been a long time in the making, given that bargain Tuesdays have been a thing forever.
Yeah, AMC announced they're slashing some prices. And then there's Max, which was formerly HBO Max and now changing its name back to HBO Max. Do you think that these things, these changes are in response, are major studios getting some public backlash that, you know, maybe things need to be more expensive or less expensive, rather, it's getting too expensive?
Is that for me?
Yeah, Paul? Go ahead, Paul. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, well, look, people are price sensitive. If you take a family of four out to see Smurfs, it's not going to be inexpensive. But compared to other outside of the home activities, it's a relative bargain. And the irony is, too, is that the PLFs are the premium format, Dolby Vision and IMAX and the various interactive kind of moving seats type of experiences that cost more generally are on the uptick. Meaning that if people go see a movie like Twisters or like as last year, like we're going to pay a little extra so our seats move around and we feel like we're in that situation. So it's just really, I think it's just about giving something that's a great experience. If you see a great movie and you come out of there, out of the theater, you're fixated on that great movie, not how much you spent. If you go to see a movie and you're like, wow, I didn't really like that movie, then you're like, I want my money back, or you're pouting because you spent all that money. But I think this lineup for this summer is really great. And I think the overall halo effect on the movie going experience, both for theaters, big and small, movies, big and small, will be very good, because I think there's this idea that the movie theater was going away, that the pandemic would have finally put an end to that era, and it certainly has not, because as Chris said, we all have kitchens in our homes. We go out to dinner all the time, and I love to cook. I love both. People love both, doing both.
Now, and Chris, I mean, you obviously, you know, you run a theater. You can't make it free. You have to charge people for the tickets, right? So you have a bargain day on Tuesdays, is that right?
We do, yes. And we have a membership program that allows people to see, you know, a lot of movies at a very low price per month. But Paul's exactly right. And I applaud AMC for innovating the way they are. But it is a strange world we're living in, where like premium large format, IMAX to most people, they charge a premium and they're full and sold out often. And then they cost much more. So it is an interesting moment to try to understand. I think the hardest thing for me as a consumer is I can subscribe to a home streaming channel for less than the cost of like one movie ticket. So it does get a little bit strange in the value proposition, but I think exhibitors who put out, you know, a great experience and bring good movies to their screen are still doing well.
And I did want to give you a chance. You know, there is the option to sometimes make it free. What do you have? You have something that is free.
Yeah, thank you. The Film Center starts its 15th year of From Book to Film this weekend. This is our partnership with the Columbus Metropolitan Library. If you you can find the full list of films, and if you show your library card, you get up to 4 admissions at no charge at all. Mm-hmm. So this is a great opportunity for maybe underprivileged families to get out to the movies and also to really encourage kids to read these books during the summer. Kicks off this weekend with the 4K restoration of War of the Worlds from 1953, which is just an incredible film and also a great book. So hopefully we get big crowds at the center and also people go to the library and read the book.
Yeah. And Paul, what do you make of this idea of growing a new generation of movie lovers who their parents take them to the theater for that experience? Do we need that so that, like you said, so that movie theaters don't go poof?
Yeah, it's generational. I love that initiative that Chris and the Film Center are doing. That's just brilliant. And I think it is generational. I mean, we think back to the first time we went to a movie. It was generally with our family, with our parents, with our brothers and sisters and or friends. And I remember going to a James Bond marathon when I was like 12 or 13 and just sitting there. My mom would drop us off and left us there for like 10 hours, and which was great for her. And I just love it. I think that's how you get people to get out of the house, to go into this experience, the world that, you know, the wave, the rush that you get when you're seeing a great movie in a movie theater. And most people can remember the first movie that impacted them. Maybe they remember the first streaming show that impacted them. But I think just that being within the architecture of the movie theater, the physical environment, looking up at the ceiling, looking at the, you know, the one sheets on the wall and watching trailers and munching on the popcorn. It's just this, it's baked into our cultural DNA to want to go to the movies. And I don't think that's ever going away, much as some people wanted to jump on that bandwagon when the pandemic hit and shut down theaters, thinking they would never come back. And they've really come back. There's still challenges. I don't want to paint this picture like there's not challenges for studios and theaters, but there's challenges for every business. But when this Memorial Week, when people are in that theater watching Mission Impossible or Lilo and Stitch or Final Destination or Thunderbolts or Sinners or a Minecraft movie, they're going to be having a great time. And I think it's really important right now for people to have that great escape at the movie theater, movies big and small.
Well, I want to say thank you to Paul Dare-Garabedian, Senior Media Analyst at Comscore. Thanks for joining us today, Paul.
Thank you so much, Amy. I really appreciate it.
And thank you to Chris Hamill, CEO of the Gateway Film Center. Thanks for being here, Chris.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to talk about Ohio's place in the movie industry. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jarovich. For those excited to see Superman, you may have spotted some familiar landmarks in the most recent trailer. We see him flying around the skyline dominated by Key and Terminal Tower, being saved in the streets of Cleveland, and there's a romantic shot in the arcade. Superman also filmed a scene or two in Cincinnati and in Mentor, Ohio. Are filmmakers making a greater effort to bring production here to Ohio? Well, joining us now is Molly Kruseman, Program Director for Ohio Goes to the Movies. Welcome back to the show, Molly.
I'm so excited to be back with you, Amy.
Now, Ohio Goes to the Movies is a part of a big countrywide celebration of America's 250th anniversary. And Molly, let's start with this summer movie season. As someone who loves movies, what movie are you most excited about that's coming out this summer?
Okay, Amy, I'm gonna give you the truth here, mm-hmm. and that is I have been such in a deep dive of Ohio-centric films that I really can't tell you what I'm the most excited about. I mean, of course, Superman, how amazing. We get to see our own state in it, and that's going to be wonderful. But I'm really excited about all the Ohio films. And I have to tell you that most folks may not know that there was a film made in Cincinnati called The Mastermind, which is premiering as one of only 22 films at the Cannes Film Festival that's up for the Palme d'Or, which is an extraordinary honor. So I'm very much hoping to get to see that this summer as well.
You said it's called The Mastermind?
The Mastermind. Okay. And the director is a woman named Kelly Reichert.
Okay. And it was filmed in Cincinnati?
It was indeed.
Okay. Do you know what it's about?
Or I do, but I'm going to let people look it up.
Okay. Well, the upcoming Superman movie has a lot of scenes that were filmed in Cleveland and Cincinnati. Is this exciting for local filmmakers to be able to see Ohio on the big screen?
It absolutely is. And I will tell you also, a recent film here made in Columbus was Down to the Felt. And it was the opening night film for Cinema Columbus. And people just cheered because they knew all the places in the film. And I believe last time I was here, I talked also about Nutcrackers that was filmed over in Wilmington, Ohio, and I got to go to that premiere. Same thing. It's so exciting when you get to see your town and your friends on the screen. It really changes the whole dynamic of seeing a film.
Oh, I wonder what kind of plans the city of Cincinnati has for Superman. I'm sure big.
Oh, they have very big plans. Yes. And you'll have to reach out to Bill Garvey with Film Cleveland, and he can fill you in on that more.
Yes. Well, so the summer movie season used to kick off in late June. It was kind of a 4th of July thing, but it seems to be starting earlier and earlier. I mean, it's probably already started if you consider a few films that came out a few weeks ago. What do you make of that? Is it still a summer movie season, or is it just the movies?
No, I think it's still a summer. You know, I think movies definitely have seasons, and that makes sense. And I think, you know, yes, it's extended. As you were talking with your last two guests, you know, we're figuring out ways to get folks back into theaters. So in my role as director of Ohio Goes to the Movies, I'm working both with the state ecosystem of films, if you will, which includes, of course, theaters and film commissioners and film festivals and colleges and professors and all that kind of thing. But I still believe the last place to really recover from COVID are theaters. And there are a lot of young people who have never seen a film in a theater, which, you know, for us folks that are a little more mature, that's kind of sad because we know they're missing on such an unbelievable experience.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich, and we're talking with Molly Kruseman, Program Director for Ohio Goes to the Movies. Now, Ohio Goes to the Movies is a part of a big countrywide celebration of America's 250th anniversary, and Molly is working to plan a big all-Ohio film series for 2026. That's for America's 250th anniversary, and it'll feature all the Ohioans involved in movies, both in front of the camera and behind the camera. Can you give us an update on how the plans are going for your big events?
Well, I'm very excited to announce that I believe, as of Friday, I now have all 88 counties that will have venues, which puts us at about 243 venues that will be showing Ohio-centric films. It will start, we'll kick off February 11th at the Edison House, because, of course, without Thomas Edison, we wouldn't have film or sound. Well, somebody probably would have come up with it, but that's also his birthday. And then we'll run for approximately 250 days. And it's so exciting because we have everybody involved from commercial theaters, historic theaters, independent theaters, art house theaters, schools, libraries. We even have one county that's working with their parks and recs, and they're going to show a film at the swimming pool, and they're calling it a dive-in, which I think is fantastic. So there's lots of really amazing collaborations that are happening around this. Films are being shown every day of the week. And as soon as we have this all figured out, probably around early fall, we'll put out the entire schedule for everyone so you can just plan your whole 2026 around where you want to go and what films you want to see.
Now, in some more recent news regarding movies in Ohio, I was disappointed to see that the Sundance passed up on Cincinnati for holding its film festival. It was a finalist, though. So what did you think of Ohio getting passed up for the Sundance?
You know, in a lot of ways, it made sense where they picked, which was Boulder. Boulder is very similar to Park City. I think they missed a huge opportunity. I think that Kristen Schlottman, who is our film commissioner down there, and the entire city, and in fact, the entire state, really stepped up. I think they would have been unbelievably pleased with what could have happened. Mm-hmm. However, saying that, you know, Kristen put us on the map in a whole different way. Mm-hmm. I think people will look at us differently. I think there's going to be really big, exciting things that actually come out of this. So I can't say more than that, but
another film festival,
well,
maybe.
You just don't know.
All right, well, stay tuned. But you know, what would the idea of a big film festival do for the Ohio film industry? Because, you know, Ohio isn't necessarily known, you know, around the country as being a movie destination, but we're working on it.
Well, I'll tell you, actually, the Cleveland International Film Festival is a very, very respected festival, and it's qualifying for the Oscars. I will also tell you the Chagrin Documentary Film Festival is also another incredibly respected film festival. You know, we have a lot of really wonderful smaller festivals, and I think for right now that's fine, and I think we're building things. Would a big festival make a huge difference? It might. I'll tell you honestly, the thing that I think makes the biggest difference, and I kind of wanted to talk about this today, if I might, to let folks know about what really takes place on a film set. Mm-hmm. So one of the things when you're thinking about a film, what you may not realize is on a film set, there are dozens of people that are working on this. And it's a well-scripted ballet. Everybody knows their place of where they're supposed to be and what they're supposed to be doing. And the thing that's really beautiful is it's everybody from the trades like construction or hair and makeup all the way through PhD. Everybody is on equal footing. Everybody respects each other. And these are living wage jobs. So my hope is through Ohio Goes to the Movies that we get more people excited to film here. Then if you look at the ecosystem outside of the actual set and you look at how many people are affected when a film is made. So for instance, Superman. You've got hotels, you've got construction, you've got restaurants, floral shops, catering. I mean, the list goes on and on. And I think that's the thing that sometimes gets lost is it's seen as just sort of this glamorous activity. But truly, it's an activity that employs a lot of Ohioans. And so I really want people to be cognizant of that when they're watching films, is that you're actually employing your friends and neighbors when you go to the movies.
Yeah, a lot of states are offering lucrative tax breaks and to lower the production costs to bring movies to their states. And as a result, we're seeing fewer and fewer movies made in Hollywood. Do you think that trend is going to continue?
I do. I think that, you know, things will keep being competitive. I think Ohio has done a fantastic job. You know, we do a 30%. Now, let me just give you a disclaimer. I am not involved with the Ohio Film Tax Credit, and that is not part of Ohio Goes to the Movies. But I do keep up with it because I want to stay on top of these things. You know, we have a 30% tax credit, and that is for wages. So it's a credit that you get after you've finished filming. I think that we are in the middle of the pack as far as being competitive. I think that our legislators, there are many of them who absolutely get this and get the jobs part of it, and they are working hard to keep improving the film tax credit. I also think, you know, with advances in technology, you don't necessarily need to be on a soundstage or in Hollywood. Now, Hollywood is never going to go away, nor should it. Mm-hmm. But I think it could be more equitable. So mm-hmm. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah. And, you know, there was there's been different strikes that have impacted the movie industry. Mm-hmm. The film industry has seen some challenges. Mm-hmm. But do you feel like we're in an upswing here?
I really do. And I think, you know, as you were talking with your two guests earlier, I think the thing that's really going to move forward in all of this is going to be independent films. Mm-hmm. And we've had a number of really great independent films made here. Again, Carol was made in Cincinnati. So I think we're going to see, you know, I believe last time I was on, I talked about Tar, which had a $40 million budget. Mm-hmm. That's no longer, you know, we're talking big budget. Mm-hmm. So independent films are having a much bigger budget. And I believe that that's the way a lot of folks are going to go. Now, again, studios are never leaving. Mm-hmm. But I think there's room for everybody. I really, truly believe there's room for everybody.
I want to say thank you to Molly Kruseman, Program Director for Ohio Goes to the Movies. Thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely my pleasure.
And this has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.
Morning Edition.